This is Corblen from Alberta, Canada, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senors and senoritas. This is Chris Shipley, and you are listening, of course, to episode number 194 of your favorite podcast, Walking the Floor. Wow, we are closing in on that 200th episode. What's that going to be? I got to do something special for the 200th episode. Now, I mean, that's not to imply that not every episode is special, because of course they all are, and today is no exception. The biggest thing to have happened this week for me, it's two things. I got my second Moderna shot yesterday, and I feel a little woozy, but I feel fine. I'd heard that the second Moderna shot was the one that was kind of fucked everybody up, but it didn't. It hasn't hit me too hard yet, but the day is young. And the second thing, the second big thing for me was, you probably know by now, that we got to play Back in Black by AC/DC with Brian Johnson at Vax Live, which was like one of the most incredible nights of my life. And it wasn't just one of the most incredible nights, because we actually got a couple days of rehearsing with him and hanging with him. And I gotta say, Brian Johnson, a king among men. Oftentimes with those things, you don't really get a lot of time to hang out with the superstar that's coming to join your band for a day. But we did get some good hang time with Brian and his wife, and they were so great and just so much fun. It was just amazing, amazing, amazing. If you haven't watched it, go check it out. All right, let's talk about Zounds.com. You know, Zounds.com provides free shipping on every order. No exceptions, no exclusions. They have three warehouses strategically located all across the United States so they can get you your gear fast. And their staff is all musicians. So why would you go anywhere else for your music gear on the internet when you got Zounds.com? Let's get to today's interview. All right, today's guest is Mr. Corblen, who, as you may know, if you listen to this podcast often, is without a doubt the most requested guest by the fans in the history of my podcast. I've been reading your emails. I didn't for a long time, but I've been reading them, and there have been so many requests to get Corblen on the show. I don't know how I missed this man up until now, and I apologize, but I'm bringing you the goods today, and it's... It was a wonderful conversation. He's a great guy. We've crossed paths before, but I don't think we've ever actually met. And it was fun talking to him. He just re-released his agricultural... Well, he released the deluxe version of his record, Agricultural Tragic, which is like, if you've never listened to him, go check it out. He's like super old school country, but like modern at the same time. And surprisingly, we may have crossed paths way back when in the punk rock days of the 90s, somewhere on tour up in Canada. We talk about that a little. Okay, all the way from the Great White North, this is Mr. Corblen on Walking the Floor. Man can do.
Like the old boys do.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hey.
You hear me?
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Where are you right now? Are you in Austin with the snow and the power outages and all that stuff?
No, I'm up in Canada. I'm in Alberta. So, yeah, snow, but that's normal for us.
Okay. I thought you were living in down in Texas these days.
I have over the years a few different times for different periods of time.
Okay.
It's funny watching the Texans cope with snow, though.
I know, right?
Are you from the West Coast?
I am. Yeah, I grew up in Santa Barbara and have lived in Los Angeles for many years. I feel like you and I played a show together at Americana Fest a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
am I remembering that right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I played right before you. Yeah.
Yeah, at the basement.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's a crazy week always.
Oh God. That was really a crazy busy. Cause I was like doing double duty. I was like doing gigs and then trying to jam as many podcast interviews into it as I possibly could.
Does that take up a lot of your time?
I mean, it depends, you know, I've like, if I'm home, you know, obviously this year I've had more time than normal. But then at the same time, you know, like Foo Fighters have been crazy busy with stuff too. So it's been, and because of COVID, like everybody's publicist was like looking for the stuff
right.
to do. So it was like, it was kind of like a windfall of podcast opportunity, but then I had to kind of like, I couldn't do it all. Now I'm like super backlogged, but whatever, you know, it takes up a fair bit. Like each individual episode is more time consuming than I think people probably.
Do you go and edit it a lot or?
Not a ton. I'm over the, when I first started, I would edit it a lot and I would edit myself. You know, I would like, I was so uncomfortable listening, like doing the interviews. I'd never done it before that I would just fumble and stumble my way through them. And I would go back and re-record myself asking the question.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But then, you know, you just get used to it. And now, you know, whatever. I figured that I like to just leave it kind of like,
I mean, you can talk shop with guys. So it's not, I mean,
it's just a matter of getting comfortable. You know what I mean? Like there's a little learning curve there. Like you're like, oh my God, I'm interviewing John Doe. I don't want to fuck this up. You know?
Yeah. How was the Setzer one? I haven't had a chance to listen to that one. That guy.
Oh my God. He was so great. He was, yeah. I mean, I grew up being pretty obsessed with his guitar playing. So that was like a one that meant a lot to me. And he couldn't have been more, just like cordial and, nice. And, you know, like answered all my dumb questions that I've been brewing for the last 40 years, you know, it was great.
Coulter was on too. Hey,
he was like, ages ago, kind of right around the time his first record came out.
Oh, was it that long ago? Cause I listened to it. It's been a while. So
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's funny? I know him. He's Canadian too, hey?
Sure, sure.
Small community. But you know what's funny is like Rogan's all into him lately, right?
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, and he said a number of times, I want to get him on the show. And the last thing I heard was he reached out to his publicist and Coulter's working on, he's working on a ranch in Texas during COVID. And he's like, yeah, I called up his publicist, and Rogan's like, yeah, he says he's working at a ranch, so he'll give me a call when he's done. It's like, it's hilarious because he's got a gazillion listeners or whatever, and everybody would give their eye teeth to be on that show. And Coulter's like, yeah, I'll give you a call when calving season's over or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I haven't seen Coulter in a while. I don't know him well or anything, but I saw him a few times here and there. But I heard through the grapevine that he had sort of switched into like not really doing interviews or something. I don't know if that's true. Really? That's just something I heard. So he didn't tell me that. I just heard that from somebody that heard it from somebody that whatever, you know. Yeah, that would sort of make sense, I guess, a little bit. He's like, I'm not doing an interview. I don't care if it's Joe Rogan.
Yeah, and then that makes Rogan like him even more. He's like, oh, the guy's totally fantastic. It's awesome.
if Joe Rogan is looking for anybody to interview, he could interview us. We'll go on in place of Culture Wall.
Absolutely.
Represent his, you know, you can be like the Canadian voice and I'll be the American. you know, I got to tell you, so I've had this, you know, I've done this podcast for years and I've had like this Gmail account that if you go to my website and you press like contact, it directs you to this Gmail account. And really it was a thing that I set up for like people who, you know, cause I don't want that stuff clogging up my actual email. And over the years, I've just never looked at it. And I always sort of viewed it as like, if a publicist doesn't really know how to reach me, it's probably somebody that I don't necessarily want to be dealing with their pitches anyway. So there was a series of events that led to me a couple of weeks ago going and actually reading through like thousands of emails.
Is the one that's on your site, like your public one? Or?
Yeah, exactly. And I got to tell you, and most of it's like spam and people going like, I love the Foo Fighters. What, you know, it's most of it's like that kind of stuff. But then there's a lot of them are people suggesting possible guests. Like, I'd love to hear you interview Willie Nelson, or I'd love to hear you interview so-and-so. And by far and away, and I'm telling you, it wasn't even close. You are by far the most requested guest for my podcast. I was like, how have I not interviewed this dude all these years? Like, it seems like the it's literally like it's like 100 to 1 in terms of people like suggesting.
Really?
Oh yeah, dude. It's a lot of people have been emailing me over the years. So I immediately reached out. It just turns out that, you know, I know Brady, that's your publicist. So
right.
It worked out. I was like, got to get this dude on the show, man. I've been blowing it.
That's great. Well, I'm sort of, my career has always been kind of on the fringes, and we do pretty well, but we're sort of on the outskirts of things. So it's, but the people that like us tend to be pretty loyal. So
I mean, where do you sort of see, or, I mean, you probably don't care. Most musicians don't care, but where do you sort of see yourself? Cause I hear different things in your music. Like some of your earlier music leaned almost like had a little bit of an alt rock flavor to it, you know, in mixed in there. And, but now I hear you more as like, almost like straight up country and not like mainstream country, but you know what I mean? Like where do you kind of see yourself in that world?
Well, it's funny. Cause we called our last record Agricultural Tragic. That's what I've been jokingly calling my subgenre for a long time. Cause I mean, musically it's, you know, it's outlaw country, underground country, you know, but lyrically, like my family are all cowboys for 120 years on both sides. I've been raising cows. So in Utah, Nevada, and then in Alberta for the last 100. And so there's a lot of, like lyrically, there's a lot of rural content, like a lot, not 100%, but there's right. a lot of, kind of stuff that is specifically about cattle or, you know, getting bucked off horses or what, you know, stuff, real life stuff that we deal with. So it's interesting because my audience is kind of a mix. Like we'll have, you know, rockabilly dudes, and then we'll have ranchers that have come 200 miles to the city to see us. So it's an interesting mix. I mean, actually, on a side note, I was going to say, did you guys know Use for a Name? Did you ever play Canada?
Oh yeah, many times.
Yeah, because I want to say I was in a metal band called The Smalls way back in the 90s, and I might have opened a festival for you guys somewhere along the way. I can't remember where, but
oh yeah, no, we, you know, it was a funny thing with that scene, that sort of whatever you want to call it, 90s punk, or you know, the whole Epitaph Fat Records thing, because our, like a band like No Use for a Name at that time in the mid 90s, like we were pretty strong on the West Coast, and then the further east you would get, the crowds would get smaller and smaller. And I remember the first time going up into Canada with the band, because for some reason, like Quebec in particular, Montreal and Quebec City was like the global standout for that scene. I don't know why, but it was bigger there than anywhere else. So I remember this one, the first time I ever went up there, like we toured across the country, and like we played New York, and maybe like 100 people showed up, and we played Boston, and there was like 60 people or whatever. And we drove up, and the next show was in Montreal, and it was the Spectrum sold out. Like
really, huh?
I'd never played a show like that in my life. Like whatever it was, you know, 1,000 kids just freaking out, you know what I mean? So Canada was especially like, especially the French part of Canada, but you know, Toronto and Vancouver and towns like that were always pretty strong too. But yeah, no, I that's the only time was when I was in that band that I played like, you know, towns like Thunder Bay and Saskatoon and
you did all those, eh?
Regina and you know, all those like the sort of the a little off the beaten path, you know.
It's funny because those of us that have done the indie tours in Canada, it's basically a line, right? Because all the population's within a couple hundred miles of the border. Yeah. So there's not a lot of zigzagging. It's you start in Vancouver and you go straight east and you end up in Montreal and Toronto. But there's a band from Edmonton that was on Epitaph called SNFU that I'm really good friends with.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And they took our band out. They were our heroes back then. So yeah.
And there's and Fat Records had Propagandi too. That was,
that's right.
Maybe they were from, were they Winnipeg
or Saskatchewan?
Saskatchewan. Okay.
Yeah. I guess that's a roundabout way of getting back to the point about what I'm doing now is that I think if I'd have started playing Western music or country music right from day one, it would have been a lot more straight down the road kind of thing. But, you know, as you know, like in the indie rock scene, you're encouraged to come up with unique ideas and your own sound, your own voice and your own unique spin on things. And that's kind of the furnace that my songwriting was forged in. So when I started playing Western music, I think I brought that with me kind of. So there's a bit of, if there's any quirkiness to it, I think it's probably owing to the fact that I was in an indie metal band for a long time.
Can you unpack the name of your last record, that Agricultural Tragic? And I know you just referenced it, Ag Trag. It's like a subgenre of, you know, country music.
Yeah.
Like there's a certain like romance in that title, you know, the tragedy of it all. What does that title mean? What does agriculture, well, I can't even fucking say it, Agricultural Tragic mean?
Agricultural Tragic, yeah. Well, like I said, it's kind of tongue in cheek because for years I said, when people ask me what I called my music, that's what I called it. But I think in my subconscious, it comes from that painting, American Gothic. You know, the two.
Yeah, old yeah, sure.
With you know, it's supposed to be kind of like a play on an art form like that. But yeah, I mean, the agricultural part is because that's a little of the lyrics are stem from. But the tragic part is kind of, I mean, part of it's tongue in cheek, but there's an element of truth to it. A lot of the songs have a kernel of human frailty or tragic flaws, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it's an interesting thing too, because I think, and you must deal with this all the time with people, you know, you're probably sick of city slickers such as myself asking you about all this stuff, because there is a certain romantic attachment that many of us have to the idea of a rural upbringing like the one that you had that we don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was kind of tied into it as well.
Kind of, like, sort of. I mean, and it's true. It is a cool way to grow up. It's funny because I was talking about my audience before being pretty mixed. And it's strange because, you know, as crazy as politics are these days, we have a real mix of people in our audience that way too. So it's interesting because, you know, growing up in a rural setting and then spending my adult life pretty much in an urban business, at least, is interesting because you get to talk to people from different perspectives, and you sort of, I mean, there's certainly some differences, but there's more in common than we think, you know.
Sure. But I've always noticed that, especially in these sort of like these like super partisan polarized times that we live in. I'm like, I've been touring all over everywhere for a long time, and the only place I really get in arguments about politics is at home. I don't really get in arguments about that. Like when I'm in places that you would theoretically expect me to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few maniacs out there, but I think it's mostly our phones, right? Like there's hardly anybody I couldn't sit down, have a beer with and, you know, find common ground. And, you know, in the old days, it's like you say, well, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, that's not really how I see it, but that's cool. I'll buy you a beer, right?
Right, right.
But, everybody's an asshole on their phones, right? So it's like.
Right. Yeah. Don't I know it? Don't I know it? There was a line in your bio, and I you know, of course, read a lot of bios being sent to me from publicists and stuff. And there was a line in your bio I wanted you to explain a little bit because I'm too dumb to understand it. But it jumped out at me as not the usual, writing style of most people's publicists. And it said, where is it here? To that pre-fenced and perilous era of exchange between untamed infinity and we humans striving to make this land ours using heart, hope, and horses.
Holy crap, that's a bit heady for me too.
I figured that must have been you that wrote it, because there's no way your publicist wrote it. Come on.
I don't write shit like that. I think that has to do with like what you were saying earlier, but like the romance of the West and everything, you know?
Right, right.
But I'm sure you've seen, that's kind of real. Like, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it traveling, but I mean, you get into that country. I mean, I'm kind of biased because I grew up in the mountains in the West, but I mean, all down the Rockies is a really special country. Like whether it's, you know, Northern California or all the way down to Texas, really, like it's got a special openness to it. I think.
Oh yeah.
Really pretty, and I think it has an effect on people and how they think too. Like I find in the West, especially in the American West, like, you know, it's pretty conservative a lot of times, but people are more they're pretty open-minded in a way. They're kind of live and let live about stuff. Like, you know, like they accept if you don't act like a dick, people generally accept you. I like that.
I mean, where you grew up in Canada is always struck me as being culturally very similar to the same kind of region in the States, and almost all the way kind of down into Texas and Oklahoma and stuff, you know.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Right.
Culturally, I mean, for me growing up in that kind of a setting, I in some ways feel more in common with guys from Wyoming or, you know, Montana than I do with people from out east of Canada. So
really?
Yeah, in some way, not everything, but because we kind of have, I'm from, our province is called Alberta. It's directly north of Montana. So it's culturally kind of a mix of the American Rocky Mountain West with a shot of British Commonwealth in there, you know?
Right, right, right.
That's kind of the vibe.
I mean, being, you know, for somebody that plays, you know, Americana or country, however you want to put it, ag-trag, what's your experience like, you know, coming down and playing in Nashville and Austin and some of these places? Like, is it any different to be a Canadian in that scene?
A little bit, but they've been pretty good to us. Like Texas, the first time, Texas was kind of the first place that ever kind of adopted us into their scene. Like early, I'm pretty good friends with a guy named Hayes Carl.
Oh, and, sure.
You know Hayes?
Yeah, a little bit.
Interview. And I met him years ago at a festival up here, actually. And I was aware of a lot of the Texas songwriters and stuff, but he kind of helped introduce us to that world. And as you know, the Texas music scene is really unique in that they're really, like it's a big part of the culture there. And so yeah, they were sort of the first part of the states that really embraced us. And since then, I mean, we do pretty well all over the place, but the American West really seems to resonate for us because we're singing about a lot of the same topics, right?
Well, the American West is really hard to tour though, too. I was kind of curious how that is for, you know, somebody with the sort of lyrical content that you have. Like, you know, it seems like that's the most obvious place to develop a fan base, but it's also like the hardest place to tour that, you know, kind of.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt because we play a lot of fairs and rodeos and stuff in, you know, rural Colorado. So it means, you know, we don't always use a bus. So it means flying to Denver and then flying to some other little airport and then renting a car and driving 2 more hours, you know,
right, to play. Right. Yeah. Cause it's like a 15-hour drive to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a pain, but that's cool. Whatever. It's part of the deal. But, yeah, it's funny cause it depends where we're playing. Like it seems like out East, we have a pretty good following and it tends to be more, you know, people that might like Americana or Steve Earle kind of stuff.
Right.
Is my video kind of getting blurry?
Yeah, it looks a little blurry. It was clear before.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with that. It seems like it won't focus.
Huh.
There we go.
There, you just got to bang it. You just gave it a little Fonzie.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
I think, but yeah, the Canadian thing is, it's not really a hindrance. I think people find it kind of exotic.
Right.
They all want to talk to me about healthcare.
funny. I remember that. Yeah, the first time I ever drove through Canada on tour, because I had never traveled anywhere. You know, my family didn't do any traveling at all. So the first time I ever went on tour was the first time I ever drove through Canada, and I was just like, "What is this place? What Tim Hortons? What the fuck? This place is amazing." How come there was a 5-year gap there between records for you?
That's a good question. I think I just kind of burned out. You know, I've been doing this ever since high school, like in the rock band for years and then doing this for years. And it sounds kind of like a cliche, but I think I ran out of things to say.
Really? And,
yeah.
Was it like an intentional hiatus? Like I'm fucking over this and I need to go recharge my batteries? Or did you just kind of,
because we toured. We didn't stop touring. It just took me a while to write the next record. That's all, I guess. And I was kind of in a, like, it was our eighth album. And it's, you get to a point where you're like, how do you make it different or how do you make it mean something?
So how did you get past that? How did you figure out how to write out of that?
Just let it percolate. You know, I mean, it's ideally we all want to put a record out every 18 months or 2 years, I guess,
right,
for business reasons. But I just wrote a lot and actually it was kind of good because I kind of burnt out and then I came back with a full head of steam and our new record, I'm quite happy with it. So like me and the guys, I've had the same guys in my band the whole time for years and years and years.
Really?
So we sort of have a sound right. And we put more work into Sonics and more, I wrote way more songs than usual. We did more pre-pro. So yeah, we just kind of buckled down and found our energy again, you know?
And can you talk a little bit about like, what is your sort of songwriting? You know, I hate to use the word process. It's like an overused word, but you know, like what, literally like, how do you do it? You know, like what do the stars have to align? Do you wait for the inspiration? Are you one of those guys that just writes every day? Like what's your deal?
I kind of go through waves of it. Like I'll go through months where I write every day and then I'll go through months where I just play guitar and fool around, don't really write. You know, I'm sure it's the same for you. Like I get ideas constantly, whether it's lyrical ideas or guitar riffs, and I just record them, you know?
Yeah.
And then when it comes time to feel like writing again, I've got a bunch of raw material to work with. One thing I'm not very good at is, you know, sitting down at 10 a.m. with someone I don't know for 2 hours and writing a song in that 2 hours.
Right.
Hardly ever succeed at that. Almost all of my tunes take months to write because if I write for 2 or 3 hours in a day, I won't write a song. I'll have 8 or 10 or 12 on the go, and I'll sort of chip away at each one for 20 minutes. And the only way that my, you know, inner quality bell can be sure is if I have a lot of time depth on them. So I know a lot of people don't do it that way, and they bang them off in an afternoon. I wish I could do that, but the only way I can tell if it's any good is if I return to it over and over and over and it remains good. So it takes me a long time. I write a lot of words per square inch too. So.
Oh really? Like that? You then have to kind of like pare down.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one of the things that drives me crazy about songwriting. Like if I'm not doing a lot of writing, I start to get stressed about that. And then when I'm recording a lot of little ideas, you know, cause it always comes like you get like half a chorus and you record it on your phone or something. And then those pile up, and then that stresses me out. Cause it's like, it reminds me of like not doing homework in school or something like that. There's just this thing out there looming that I know I'm supposed to be dealing with, you know?
You know, what's funny about that is I've had periods of time before where I've had to trick myself into it. Like, it's funny, cause when I was in the rock band years ago, I was supposed to be writing rock songs, but I would sneak off and write Western songs for fun. And if a funny thing happened, cause the last couple of years of the rock band, I was like, this is going to be great the writing was on the wall. We were probably going to retire. I was like, this is going to be great. Cause I could spend all my time on country Western music. And then when I got to the point where that was my main thing, then I got the procrastination fear around that. And I would have to do other shit that was on. So I have to kind of sometimes trick myself into it. Like if I tell myself that, okay, this week it's all about house renos and it's all about fixing my truck, but maybe I'll just play guitar a little bit. Then I'll trick myself into, it's like I have to be playing.
Accidentally finishing a few tunes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I have to be accidentally or pretending I'm playing hooky. I don't know. It's weird, but procrastination is a thing for sure.
It's a funny thing too. Like when you literally right before I jumped on this call with you, I pulled up an idea that I wrote, like, you know, at the beginning of COVID that I kind of liked and kind of, you know, kind of felt like, I don't know, and just let it sit there for a while. And right before we got on the phone, it popped into my head and I pulled up that song and like tweaked it a little bit. And I was like, okay, I think this might be kind of where I want it, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't take much. Like that's kind of why I spend a lot of time with them. Cause I've got tunes that literally took me years to write. Cause I had a chorus and a verse and I just got stuck on it. Right. And then sometimes it's your buddy will point something out, or sometimes you just look at it a different way and just go, well, change the key, it's great, or slow it down, it's great, or whatever. Right. So.
Now, obviously we've all had this crazy year, and I know you've got the deluxe version of Agricultural Tragic coming out. But I noticed that you had released a deluxe version of one of your earlier records not too long ago too. Is that like part of what, have you been like kind of going through your archives during this time at home?
Yeah, not really on purpose, but I just realized that we had a on the record you're talking about from 2012, it's called Cabin Fever. It's one of my better ones. And I kind of forgot that we had some bonus tracks and stuff that we hadn't put out. And so, yeah, I just mentioned it to my management and they said, yeah, let's put it out. So, I mean, I'm sort of neck deep in writing now because, I mean, I'm sure it's the same as everybody. I lost 6 months of touring, right? So I'm sort of looking at it in terms of, you know, a mandatory writing period, you know? So I'm writing a bunch of stuff and I'm making a record called Songs My Friends Wrote. It's like the opposite of a tribute record, you know, where a bunch of smaller people do famous people's songs. I'm taking a bunch of my friends that some of them are further in their career than me, but some of them aren't. And so I'm taking all my buddies to like all my favorite songs of all my friends and making a record like that.
Oh, wow. Like who are some of the artists that you're going to be covering?
Hayes, mentioned him before. My producer, John Evans, he's a good friend of Hayes and I's. And there's a Canadian songwriter. He's an older guy named Ian Tyson. And who else? Todd Snyder.
Nice.
Fred Eagle Smith. Maybe Nico Case. I know Nico from the old days. And
you mentioned Todd Snyder. There were a lot of comments. I interviewed him at that same week at Americana.
He's a beauty, huh?
Oh, he's so great. And I really like, I love his music and love talk. That's, you know, the only time I really ever talked to him, and it was fantastic. But there were many comments in that email account that I was telling you about that, were complaining that I talked over his answers too much. So I'm like, it's made me like, I'm really trying to shut the fuck up and let you talk. Well, I don't know if I'm succeeding.
Yeah. Well, Todd's fun to listen to. He's, I don't know him real well. I've hung out with him a few times, but he's like, that guy is so insightful with his writing. You know, he says that stuff that we all think and just never think to put it in a song, you know?
Right.
And he's sharp as a whip too, that guy.
Oh yeah. I'm convinced that his whole persona is like, you know, no, I wouldn't say it's an act, but maybe he, you know, he's expected to be the fuck up, and he's really like, you know, an incredibly smart dude.
I don't know well enough to say for sure. He's pretty good pretty good at the act. If it's
he's committed to it.
Yeah. And so, I'm doing that, and I'm working on a new record too, like a proper record of my own stuff. So
I mean, going back to, you know, growing up, what was it you think that got you into music? You said you come from a family on both sides that have been ranching for a long time. Like, was music a part of your family's world, or was that something you found on your own?
Little both, in a sense. Like, the first songs I ever learned to sing were these old cowboy songs that my grandpas would sing. And they weren't musicians. It was from an earlier time when singing ballads was kind of a oral history / personal entertainment thing before there was radios and video games, you know, people who would just sing. So I learned a few of those ballads from them, but they weren't musicians, and no one in my family were musicians. And in fact, music for me will forever be tied up with rebellion and stuff, because, you know, my family had a really strong tradition in that sort of Western setting. And I got into, like, you know, Black Flag and Black Sabbath and all that stuff. Right. Right. So it was utterly alienating for my folks. But I think what it was, you know, I identify really strongly with my own history now, but, you know, when you're a teenager, you got to go out and make your own way. So for me, music was, even though I do stuff that's a lot closer to my heritage now, like, I feel like music is, the DNA of my music is all wrapped up with kind of rebellion. And like, it's funny, because I imagine what it would be like to be one of those people that grows up in a bluegrass family. You know, everybody plays, and they play mandolin like a demon from when they're 7 years old. But to me, it's like music is still a big fuck you kind of. I don't mean to be that way, but that's just how it's tied up in my brain.
Sure.
You know, so that's kind of how I came to it. You know, total nerd at school, no friends except for my 3 or 4 buddies in our garage band, you know, and we didn't play sports, didn't date any girls, didn't do any of that stuff. We just hung out and, you know, played tunes. I mean, it's funny, because we were in a small little town in Alberta, and we only had, you know, before the internet, it was like, we had exposure to like a few things, and like enough to get us a whiff that there was another world out there, like the underground world. Like, you know, sure. We knew about the Sex Pistols, and we knew about a few of the bigger indie bands, but we weren't close enough to a major center to go see punk rock bands every weekend. So we were kind of doing like a mixture of kind of writing like kind of Sex Pistol-y tunes mixed with Judas Priest kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
And then it wasn't until I moved to a bigger city called Edmonton I went to music school like for a year out of high school, just for the hell of it. And that was the first time we discovered SNFU, because, you know, you walk around, you see the shitty, you know, photocopied poster pasted to the street post, and then you go to the weird hall, and it's a fucked up PA, you know, that scene, right?
And
it's amazing, because it's like, it breathed so much life into what I thought music could be, because before that, it was all what you hear on the radio, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you see your first couple of, especially for me coming from the country, you see those first couple of punk rock gigs, and it's just like the energy is just, it's like I've never seen anything like it. And it was like the most vital, alive thing I'd ever seen. You know, it's amazing.
There's something really like beautiful about what you're talking about when you're young. And I mean, you lived in a small town. I didn't live in a teeny small town, but it was far enough away, you know, a couple hours away from LA, that like, you know, we weren't like all that hip really looking back, you know? And so you, but that allows these strange hybrid influences to creep in because you don't really know what like the rules are.
It's true.
You know? It's a beautiful thing. I think that that's something that, you know, whatever, there's upsides and downsides to technology, but that I think is something that's kind of lost now.
Yeah. It's harder to live in a backwater now, you know?
Right. Cause there aren't any. Yeah.
For better or for worse. And you're totally right about that mixing influences thing. Cause like, if you're in a bigger city, you know, you got the metalheads and you got the punk rockers and you got the rockabilly dudes, they don't hang out. Right.
Right.
But even in Edmonton, is a small enough city that if there was a cool, you know, punk show or indie show coming through, everybody would go to it. Even the metalheads would go and the mod 60s dudes would show up. Yeah, everybody.
Right.
So you had a melting pot.
That's exactly what it was like where I went up. My friend just pointed that out to me the other day, that there weren't enough of any like subgroup to, you know, constitute a scene on its own.
Yeah.
So they all had to kind of hang together, you know,
that's right.
The goths and the skinheads and the whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember those shows. Yeah. You have all the contingents represented.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So when did it turn into like playing in bands and, you know, trying to like go out there in the world and make it or whatever?
Like 19, I guess.
Okay. What year are we talking?
Like, 1,000 years ago, like early 90s, probably the same as you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be 50 years old this year. So I'm.
Yeah. Same.
Okay. Yeah. So we
roughly, but yeah, like, so it was indie rock and metal-y punky stuff, for 10 years, but I kind of had even halfway through that, I'd already made a couple on the side sort of folk Western records. So yeah. And it was, everybody in my rock band liked old country music too. So it wasn't really like a surprise. And we blended a little bit of that in too. So.
I read a quote of yours where you said like you prefer playing live to recording, which I totally relate to. And it said, it was something like making records is kind of cool. I mostly make records to play live, which I assume must make this time that we're living through especially frustrating.
Yeah, I miss it for sure. I mean, in a sense, it's okay because I've been doing it the whole time pretty hard. So it's been, and I'm the kind of personality that wouldn't allow myself to take off a year and just work on my guitar playing and write. But it's been all right just because you know, you have to just sit there and embrace it. So it's been okay. But yeah, I certainly miss a lot. Like, that's the whole reason I got into playing music is like, you know, what I was talking about before, those first couple of punk shows you see and the energy. And it's the same. I've seen B.B. King before, and Willie. You can tell within 20 seconds, like if somebody comes on stage, and you can tell right away, oh, this guy's been doing this, and they are the real shit, right?
Right.
And
that, I would say you can tell by how somebody holds their guitar.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? That's always a giveaway.
Yeah, I mean, ever since those early shows, I just always it sounds kind of trite, but I always wanted to know what it would feel like to be that guy, you know?
Right.
Like, I just thought, man, that would be so, you'd have so much wisdom and so much depth. Turns out not really, but
I was gonna say, then you get there and you're like, I don't have any fucking wisdom, man.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, you know what it's like playing a good live show? There's nothing like it, right?
Yeah.
No, I mean, my instincts were correct, but it was that live energy that was the thing that drew me to it in the first place. And I'm making records is cool. It's fun. And it's an interesting experiment and everything, but it's like, I often think it must be a lot like, making movies versus doing live theater. Right.
Right.
Cause you don't get to me, the actual art form of it is not only the music, but the interaction part, like that whole 90 minute energy conversation that goes on, that is the art form to me.
You know, it took me I couldn't agree with you more, and it took me a very long time to really get that. I mean, it really in the last few years when I started doing a lot of solo acoustic gigs where you don't have any volume and you don't have
it's naked, right?
It's so naked. And I kind of quickly, and I was so miserable doing them at first because it just scared the hell out of me. And I finally realized, like, when the whole thing with those shows is connecting with the crowd and making that a part of the show and, you know, the sort of back and forth.
Yeah. I remember the first, I was probably in a similar position because I played bass in the rock band, and the first, you know, 50 shows kind of suck, you know, when you're singing and it's just you and an acoustic and your songs as well. So it's all you, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the beauty of it also, but it's a formidable thing to do. You know, it's normal now, but I remember the early days, it's scary as hell, right?
Totally. You mentioned working on your guitar playing. What have you been doing to work on your guitar playing? Because I love like taking lessons with people on Zoom and shit like
yeah.
that. I do a bit of that myself. I think it's so fun.
Yeah, so I'm kind of a hack. Like I can do what I can do when I need to. I'm a decent rhythm guitar player, but I just I've never been a natural at it. I've always had to work real hard at it. And so I've just been trying to get more fluid, basically, which comes down to weird stuff. Like it kind of leads you to weird places. I wanted to take guitar lessons. You end up like meditating and digging into your past and stuff. Cause it's like, why is this tension here? Cause I know guys like my guitar player, Grant, he's melts my face off. He's amazing. And I know a few guys like that and they're just chill dudes. Right. And I'm not, cause I'm like running the business and writing the songs and leading the band and booking the tour back in the day, all that stuff. So I'm more of a, you know, goal oriented, get shit done kind of guy, which doesn't always map well onto art. I've been able to compartmentalize my brain and make it work, but I'm just trying to get more fluidity in my playing mostly is probably the goal.
That's interesting. Cause I have also noticed that over the years when I relax, when I play, if I remember to breathe, I figured out like, cause when I started playing, I wasn't a singer. So I started playing and singing and stuff. And I would realize when I would, like, if I took a guitar solo, I'd go back to sing the next verse and I would like have not breathed the whole time, you know, just stuff like that. It is really funny. Sometimes you have to, you figure out like, God, it's so much, my flow is so much better on the guitar when I just relax and enjoy it and try to remember why I did it in the first place.
It's all that, I think.
Yeah.
95% of it is what you just said. And it's funny with the singing too, because there's been times when I've been tense or something and I'll be like, why can't I sing? It's like, oh, fuck, I haven't had a breath in 2 minutes. That's why. And you have to remind yourself to go, and it gets a lot better, right?
Totally.
It's funny because it's getting into like, it gets into the esoteric sort of like, you know, music as vehicle for self-development kind of world. Cause it's like all of a sudden you realize, well, I don't really relax and breathe that much anytime in my life.
Right.
And so the music becomes a teaching aid for whatever. No one cares about this.
No, it's good. It's cause I mean, it really is. It's sort of like why we all write songs, you know, cause you're working something out, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Did you find it? How big was the transition for you between, you know, what you do in the rock band versus you know, playing rhythm acoustic?
I mean, it was
pretty natural, or was it difficult?
No, it was so unnatural. And I tried here and there over the years to jump into that because I always loved that idea. I loved the idea of getting up in front of a room full of people with just an acoustic guitar because, you know, my heroes do that. So yeah. I was always kind of infatuated with that idea and so awkward and uncomfortable with it in practice. And it was really just a couple of years ago, you know, my man Rhett Miller had asked me to open a show for him because I was going to be on tour, you know, playing in Boston where at the same time he was doing a show. And that sort of led me on this journey of like, wow, I got to get ready for that show. And so I did a couple of other shows leading up to it. And it just started me thinking about it. And I had this conversation with Rhett at that show where he like, I don't even remember exactly what he said, but he just gave me this pep talk before I played. And it like changed my perspective on it. And then I watched his set that night and I was so struck by how miserable I tend to be in that environment and how much joy was just like pouring out of him during his set. And I was like, I got to find that. That's what I got. You know, that's what it's all about. It's so, it's like this pure joy when you see, you know, the, not just Rhett, but like the guys that are really good at that thing, you know, that's what I get out of it. And so I'm just kind of like buckled down. I made this commitment. Like I got to figure out how to be comfortable doing this because it's in your head, man. It's just like 100% in your head.
Yeah, that and just doing it 100 times, right?
Right. Yeah, 100,000 times.
Yeah, whatever. But I feel like, do you how often do you do shows like that?
Quite a bit, you know, when you can play shows. I got into this habit of doing them on off nights, because on Foo Fighter tours, we wind up having, like, you know, sometimes 2 or 3 days between gigs.
Book something that night?
Yeah. So I'll just, like, go play a little club if we're in some town, whatever, you know, just go play a club by myself and just to sort of pass the time. And just did a lot of that. And then I did a tour with a couple of friends just doing that. And I found that I like it. I actually like it. Now I really enjoy it and kind of miss it when I'm not doing it, you know?
Yeah, it's good for the head. I don't know. I probably play about 2/3 band shows and 1/3 solo shows. I've really, and I like them both, because I mean, I'm fortunate that both formats kind of work, but they're totally different, because it's like, it's funny, because when you're with the band, it's like people like it to be tight and professional and slick and smooth and here's the show. And it's funny, I've discovered that with solo shows, the more you fuck around, the more people like it, right?
Oh yeah. Some of the best moments are forgetting the lyrics. I struggle with remembering even my own lyrics. I fuck up all the time. That's
me too.
Seem to dig.
No, they do like that. They like vulnerability, right?
Right.
If you just own it and go, shit, dude, I've sung this song 1,000 times, I forgot the second verse. People love that.
Yeah.
They just want real experience, right?
Yeah, they're both so different. I mean, I love going out with a band too, because there's that camaraderie that happens on, especially, you know, if it's my solo stuff, it's a van tour and we're all jammed in there together and you're all kind of like in the trenches together. And that's super fun too. I love that too. But
I miss that too. That's one of the things I miss most during COVID is that, you know, pack of dogs going down the road in a van, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Like some kind of combat or something. There's the bond that's formed is unlike any other bond, right?
And it's a different touring experience. I mean, I love, you know, obviously I'm super lucky to be in a big band like Foo Fighters or whatever. And we tour like in a really comfortable way, but it's different. You know, it's a different experience. You just see more of the country and the world when you're in a van and you're stopping at every Flying J and, you know, staying in a shitty hotel and touring around on nights off and all that stuff.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that too, because in like some places, like in Canada, we pretty good size shows, nothing like Foo Fighters, but big enough that it's a bus and it's a hockey arena kind of thing. And that's awesome, because it's like, that's another beast, right? Playing to that's another whole thing. And the whole excitement of the big tour, it's great. And it's, you know, better for your pocketbook and all that. But I actually crave, if I do like a month and a half big tour like that, I crave getting in a van and just touring the American West, where we play for, you know, 400 people instead of thousands, right?
Right, right.
Because it's just so, like, aside from all the dough and all the career aspirations, to me, almost the best way to play, you know, rock and band music is like, you know, 300 to 600 people in a sweaty little room.
Absolutely.
Where there's no barrier. There's no stupid, you know, those big metal barrier things where they're like right there and they're grabbing at your set list and shit. I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, no doubt.
The chaos of it all.
It's like, that's where like rock and roll or, you know, whatever, guitar, bass, drums, music is kind of meant to be experienced.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we all do our best to translate it to bigger settings, right? And it works, but it's a different beast, right?
Totally.
And I find it almost affects my song choice. Like, we're to the point we don't use a set list anymore, because my guys have been with me forever. So I just got weird hand signals and stuff. So, with whatever we got, 8 or 9 records, like we every show is just a different random assortment of tunes, and it for sure affects my song choices, like, because there's certain stuff that works better, like big old choruses and all that,
sure,
hit you over the head with the drum kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but you know, if you're in a 200-300 seater, different shit works,
right?
It's cool. I mean, I'm thankful that I can do everything from, you know, sometimes we play in overseas and we get 20 people, right? Never no one's heard of us, or you know, thousands at a festival. I like all of it for different reasons.
Yeah, agreed. Me too.
I think it's really cool that you're doing the stuff on the nights off. I think that's a smart thing. I would do that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, because you know it is, like, when you're out there on the road, like, a lot of nights off, it just makes like 3 weeks feel like 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just good to, you know, I find when I'm doing a lot of like my solo stuff, it just makes me, I'm so much more in tune as a player that it translates all around, you know. Yeah. I feel like I never get dusty.
You know? Yeah. So what kind of electrics are you playing when you play your Americana stuff?
What kind of electric guitars?
Yeah.
I have a Tele, traditional Tele a lot of the time, just with single coils. Sometimes I'll take a Les Paul out or something. I have like a non-reverse Firebird that has like P90s in it. And I have a couple of Teles with P90s in them too. That I like the P90 a lot, especially because, you know, a lot of my solo stuff, if I got the band, is like, you know, it's like country rock or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
it's still pretty rocking, right?
Yeah, it can be loud. So I like that. I like that P90 thing for that. It's good.
I'm going down a TV Jones pickup rabbit hole right now.
Oh, that's a good rabbit hole.
Yeah, because I got a bunch of Gretches that I really like playing them. I've always liked playing them, but it's funny because I'll show you. This is a Setzer actually, but I put the same I kind of Van Halen it and chopped it up.
Oh, wow.
That's the same acoustic pickup that I use in my acoustic guitars.
Oh, really?
So, and I have a different jack for it. So essentially it sounds more or less like my acoustic with the same pickup, but I've discovered, because I'm kind of guitar ignorant. I've never made peace with these pickups for country music, but it's because they're humbuckers. And I've been talking to guys about, there's two or three TV Jones models that are singles that drop right in there. So I've got a bunch of them ordered. I'm excited to try them.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've never messed with those. I always use the, any of my guitars, you know, I have some Gretches that have the TV Jones pickups in them too, but I feel like I use them hot, you know, instead of not so much clean twang, but for the hot stuff. You know, coming from like a rock background, when I first started trying to even play Teles and kind of do some stuff that had a little like country flavor to it, I would throw like Quarter Pounders in a Tele. It would just be screaming. And then I'd be like, why can't I make this thing sound like Don Rich? Like it took a while to wrap my head. Like, oh, wait, just don't have such a fucking hot pickup in it.
Yeah, it's for sure a different thing, for sure. It's like the singles kind of, you kind of learn to celebrate the what's not there almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The starkness of it. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a... I mostly play acoustic or else that Gretsch, which is essentially an acoustic. But yeah, during this COVID time off, I'm really digging into single electric tunes or tones. I'm trying to get something that works. Because, I mean, playing acoustic live with a band kind of sucks because you're really not playing acoustic, right?
You're like playing a shaker. It's like turns into a percussion instrument.
Yeah. Like when I play solo shows, I have one of those little, I've got this nice little gooseneck shotgun mic for theaters and stuff. So I'm actually using a mic acoustic, but as soon as you're with the band and you plug the guitar in, you're really not playing acoustic guitar anymore. Right.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, like it's not a big jump for me to go from the single coil that's in my acoustic to just play a single coil electric. Right. It's the same time zone anyway. So I'm experimenting with a lot of tone stuff right now.
I like seeing anybody that's willing to get all Eddie Van Halen and take a hacksaw to their neck. I'm not going to go there, brother, but I'm glad to see you are.
Yeah, that's a very farm boy thing to do.
Yeah, I like it. Well, you're in the right environment in on the, you know, I'm assuming this is your garage somewhere.
It's half garage and half studio.
Oh, yeah, there we go. I like it. Well, dude, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, man. It's great talking to you and obviously long overdue. So now people can stop emailing me and I'll get this posted soon.
No, it was a lot of fun. I'm really honored to be on the show. It's good to meet you. I'll have to have a beer sometime when we're in the same.
For sure.
When I was but a young man, I was wild and full of fire.
All right, that was Mr. Corblund on Walking the Floor. I like that guy, man. He's cool. Fun to talk to. And I apologize to you, the listeners, for taking so damn long to get to that interview. But there we go. We made amends. Anyway, he just put out not too long ago the deluxe version of Agricultural Tragic. Make sure you go pick it up or stream it or however you process your music, do it. And I will see you kids in a week. Adios, amigos!
It's just some things young men can't do like the old boys do.